Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, this is Debbie Brook from Homeopathy World Community on September 5th, 2012. This is celebration of Teachers' Day in India, something really special. And I see constantly on Facebook all of these loving reports and photos, pictures, honorariums, everything for it, just for the teachers. I do not feel that we have this kind of respect and admiration for our teachers in America, so we could definitely take a lesson from all of you. And we are thrilled and grateful to have Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim with us today, Wednesday, at 11:30 Eastern Time, USA. And
Hello.
Are you coming in loud and clear?
Exactly. I mean, hope I am audible perfectly well.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to sharing some important information and some tribute to persons of leadership, qualities, education, and value in our lives who we can learn from. That's what a teacher does for us. And I know that you have prepared something special today. I want to ask those people who are with us to get on the chat. We have it open on Blog Talk Radio. You can comment. You can call in to the number 347-945-6956 and talk with us. On Skype, you can click that little Skype button and you will be on air with us. So be part of the celebration. Okay.
Well, let's start this program ticking. And it's indeed a celebration. I mean, Teachers' Day celebration. The 5th of September is in honor of late Dr. Radhakrishnan. And Dr. Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan was the second president of India. And he was one of those precious jewels of Indian crown, who enlightened the world with their thoughts and philosophy, teachings and views. And it is written about him that Stalin of Russia once paid the real tribute to him, saying, "A great philosopher and a human being who always surrounded with the ideas of humility, humanity and welfare of the society, and he had the essence of millions of books in his mind to cultivate the crop of humanity." And he was born on 5th September 1888 in a small village in Tamil Nadu, state of India, near Madras or Chennai. And it is said about him that at the raw age of 16 or 17 years, he practically managed to study all the religion books and concentrated his mind on his favorite subject, philosophy. Therefore, he appeared for the post-graduation in philosophy, and while his book, The Ethics of Vedanta and Its Material Presupposition, was the thesis for the examination of the Chennai University, published as early as 1908. At the age of 20 years, wow, a postgraduate at the age of 20 years is no joke. In 1910, he joined as the Presidency College, Chennai, as a professor of philosophy, and in a few months earned a sterling reputation. It is said again that students used to rush to his classes for listening to his lecture on philosophy in a well-crafted manner. Later, he taught in Mysore and Calcutta universities. And Dr. Radhakrishnan is, again, one of the most celebrated writers, even for the present generation. He worked on very varied topics, like philosophy, of course, his favorite, ethics, theology, logics, religion, psychology, education, history, sociology, and humanism. And, of course, he had one or two words about homeopathy also. I don't know how he came in contact. The details are not known, but he did respect homeopathy. And it is said that he has written a few lines on homeopathy, saying that the philosophy of homeopathy goes and is in consistence or in line with nature, and that is a respectable property, and the ease of administration and the miracles which it performs after administration are really worth mentioning. Those are his words. I mean, I don't know his details about how he came in contact with homeopathy and all.
Maybe he learned it from Gandhi.
Maybe. I mean, Mahatma Gandhi and Rabindranath Tagore, other two stalwarts, because he has actually written a book, The Philosophy of Rabindranath Tagore, 1912. As early as 1912, he wrote a book on Rabindranath Tagore. Rabindranath Tagore himself was very fond of homeopathy, and he used to take homeopathy. 1912, wow, that was the year when my great-grandfather started homeopathy in Nagpur, the first clinic. The basic principles of homeopathic philosophy, the reasons of religion and contemporary society, all numerous books he's written. In 1962, when some of his admirers tried to celebrate his birthday, he asked them with a tremendous humility that it will be my proud privilege that if this day, September 5th, should hereafter be observed as a teacher's day. So it reflects his love and affection for the noble profession of teaching. And being a man of education, he received reverence as vice chancellor at many universities. Of course, he was elected twice as vice president of India and finally the president of India. And in his presidency, the previous president, that is Dr. Rajendra Prasad, the first president of India, conferred on him the highest civilian award, that is called Bharat Ratna, though he had occupied this greatest job as Rashtrapati. He remained a very, very simple person. And so, as a tribute to this great doyen of our Indian soil, we remember Teachers' Day. And of course, on this day, we actually wish all our past teachers, right from our nursery or school days, college days, professional teachers, and even patients. I mean, for doctors, even patients. Today, actually, I wished all my patients a happy Teachers' Day, because many of my patients have taught me things which have not been taught to me by my own teachers or even by my books. Teachers teach, but even patients teach you wonderful things, provided you have the susceptibility to learn. So it's a tribute to all of my teachers and, of course, my gurus. And, of course, for me, my gurus are my parents, my father and my mother. They have taught me and they have made me what I am. Whatever I am and will be is because of both of them. So I'm very, very lucky to be born to them, and they have nurtured my intellect. Of course, emotionally, they're always there, strong pillars of support. So this is a day when we celebrate teacherhood. And we are so happy that in India, we do respect. And today I met many of my old teachers. Of course, I couldn't meet them personally, but I called them, remembered them, thanked them that they were in my life. They shaped, and whatever little bit they could give me, they really did. And I'm so happy to be what I am because of them.
Wow. That is not everyone pays such high tribute to their teachers and remembers them in such a way that they take the time to contact them. I mean, you sometimes see beautiful movies about teachers who made a difference in the lives of so many children, and they grow up and they pay tribute to that teacher. But we need to have more teachers that we can do that, and we need to instill in the students to show appreciation for what they have done.
And I'm so happy today that many of my students, around 1,200 to 1,300 of them, via Facebook or via messages, via phone calls, and some in persons, they came they shared their, see, entire year may you may not be meeting, it's not possible, every time birthdays are fine, I mean, you get in touch, but Teacher's Day is one special day when, I mean, if you have done something for your student, you expect what he or she is facing in his life, what he or she has reached the stage. Many of my past students, some have left homeopathy, but they're doing very well in other fields. I remember one person who contacted me early in the morning saying, Happy Teacher's Day, and he told me, sir, I've set up I'm doing business management, and I'm running a business. I said, what sort of business? You are a homeopath. He said, sir, yes. Yeah, by qualifications, I am a homeopath, but when I started homeopathy, actually he had come to me in way back in 1998. So I told him, he did not have what it takes to be a homeopath, although by qualifications he was. He had more of a business-minded inclination. And at that time I told him, see, sometime you should go in for life whatever you wish for, whatever your heart wants. It's not only by qualifications. So from then on, he left homeopathy. He did master's in business management, and he is a very successful businessman. And that day, 1998, and it's 2012, he remembers me every year, because hadn't I told him, he would have pursued homeopathy, but he would be a failure. So it was just out of, I don't know what to call, but it makes me so happy that, yes, people do acknowledge what you have said. They were small words for me. I mean, I could have told so many things. I could have forced him to stay on to homeopathy, but I said, no, go. And please do whatever your heart wishes to. Don't force yourself just because you have gained a homeopathy qualification. You know, you need not become a homeopath. So people even from varied walks of life, they come and thank you on Teacher's Day. And it's so wonderful to be remembered. As I have remembered my teachers, I have been remembered. And it's a wonderful feeling, inexpressible by words.
Well, when you guide a student to their rightful path, and let them fly and go off to do the thing that is their mission, then you have contributed so much to their well-being, and that's why they will return to you to say thank you, because you have not forced them into a mold of some kind, but you have allowed them to find their own direction in that way by guiding them and finding what's in their heart.
Exactly. And in India, there is another persona, which is called a guru. So there's a difference between a teacher and a guru. I believe I have forwarded you one food
yes,
for thought.
You did. It's beautiful.
It's so touching. And how true it is. See, anyone cannot be a guru. You can have many teachers, but you can only have one guru. Because a teacher takes responsibility of your growth. A guru makes you responsible for your growth. A teacher gives you things you do not have and require. A guru takes away things you have and do not require. A teacher answers your questions. A guru questions your answers. A teacher helps you get out of the maze. A guru destroys your maze. A teacher requires obedience and discipline from the pupil, whereas a guru requires trust and humility from the pupil. A teacher clothes you and prepares you for the outer journey, whereas a guru strips you naked and prepares you for the inner journey. A teacher is a guide on the path. I like this one best. A teacher is a guide on the path. A guru is the pointer to the way. A teacher sends you on the road to success, whereas a guru sends you to the road to freedom. When the course is over, you are thankful to the teacher. When the discourse is over, you are grateful to the guru. A teacher explains the world and its nature to you. A guru explains yourself and your nature to you. A teacher makes you understand how to move about in the world, but a guru shows you where you stand in relation to the world. A teacher gives you knowledge and boosts your ego. A guru takes away your knowledge and punctures your ego. A teacher instructs you. A guru constructs you. A teacher sharpens your mind. A guru opens your mind. A teacher shows you the way to prosperity. A guru shows the way to serenity. A teacher reaches your mind. A guru touches your soul. A teacher gives you knowledge. A guru makes you wise. A teacher gives you maturity. A guru returns you to innocence. A teacher instructs you on how to solve problems. A guru shows you how to resolve issues. A teacher is a systematic thinker. A guru is a lateral thinker. A teacher will punish you with a stick. A guru will punish you with compassion. A teacher is a pupil what a father is to son. A guru is to a pupil what mother is to her child. One can always find a teacher, but guru has to find and accept you. A teacher leads you by the hand. A guru leads you by example. And last one, when a teacher finishes with you, you graduate. When a guru finishes with you, you celebrate. So today we celebrate Teacher's Day.
And who is the author of this poem?
I don't know. Whosoever it is, it's come out of that soul. And it's true. It's always going to be true.
So this is an anonymous poem. We don't know who the author is, but still I'm sure that there is a parallel in there that resonates with the listener, that there's a line or two in there that they really agree with that says, yes, this says it all for me.
Well, so this time also we have again so many questions. What should I do? Should I start with questions and then come to rubrics?
Yeah, well, let's look at the time, and we'll do a couple of them, and then we'll move on to our study in the book, because we're missing that, and I love to do that part. So.
Exactly. So, well, first question is from Mr. Alfonso from Alencon, Orne, France. Dear Doctor, why are viral epidemics occurring so frequently nowadays? So, well, the answer is, nowadays we have observed that milder forms of viral infections like influenza. Influenza is very common, has been very common. Viral hepatitis A, at least in this part of India and the world, they have become less commoner, but instead we are getting some forms of viral infections like chikungunya, hepatitis B, C and HIV. And one of the main reasons which I have observed is due to the sensitization of the miasmatic complex. Now, I don't know, I mean, you have written Mr. Alfonso, so I don't know whether you are a homeopath or not, but still, people who can understand miasm, for them it is there. One of the main reasons which I have observed is this due to sensitization of the miasmatic complex. Miasm basically means a force. See, we have a force governing our entire constitution. Every living being is governed by a force which is called a vital force, that is a good force. And there's a diseased force or disease-producing force, which is called the miasmatic force. So we have given it a term as called miasm. There are different types of miasm depending upon the expression. We have labeled them into three parts: psoric miasm, psychotic miasm, syphilitic miasm, and the combination of the two, that is soropsychotic, sorosyphilitic, or soropsychosyphilitic, which is also called as tubercular miasm, which is very different from tuberculosis disease. So in short, miasm is a bad force, it affects the vital force, it corrupts the vital force. So, if the person has got hypersensitization, increased sensitization of that miasmatic complex in the entire population, now this makes them prone for recurrent viral fevers. And one of that complex is soropsychotic blend or tubercular blend. The earlier psoric diseases, which were self-limiting and curable, they are fast evolving into prolonged disease with complications. Chikungunya, for example, I don't know whether you have heard also of this disease, because you are from France, and chikungunya has been occurring in epidemics. So the first epidemic started in 2006. We had a repeat epidemic in 2008. And it's a viral disease that is excited by airborne flavivirus. It's a, it presents a severe myalgia. Myalgia means a muscle pain, generalized muscle pain, and it's quite severe. And arthralgia, that means joint pains, directing towards psychosis. So even after subsidence of fever, I mean, any viral fever, you have got a fever, obviously. You have got some sort of body pain. You have got some sort of joint pain, loss of appetite, etc. But then it stays for 1 week at the most and it subsides on its own. You don't need to do anything about it, any simple viral fever. But this particular viral fever of chikungunya, that even after the fever has subsided, the joint pain and stiffness in many, many patients have remained for months and years together. Even today, 6 years now, we still get patients of chikungunya who have been affected in 2006 and still suffering from arthritis. So for management of such cases, it is imperative to combat the acute episode first by some superficial homeopathic remedy. But then a deep acting anti-miasmatic remedy, which you have got drugs, like if you know of homeopathy, then the drugs like Thuja or Causticum or Sulphur or Malaria officinalis or Stellaria, etc. These drugs need to be given, and they curtail the process of progress of the disease, and it stops the disease there and then. So, your basic question, why are viral epidemics occurring so frequently nowadays? Well, they used to occur also earlier. Viral infections have been occurring throughout, but they were very self-limited in earlier days. But in this era of antibiotic resistance, see, I'm talking about antivirals, you require antiviral drugs. But in the era of antibiotic resistance, the entire population, most of the population, is hypersensitized to these viral antigens. And newer and newer viral antigens are coming. Then there's some entity as biological warfare. Many countries don't attack directly each other, but there's something as biological warfare. If I don't know if you remember, in a few years ago, anthrax bacilli basically is a zoonotic disease. That means it affects horses and animals. But then in US, anthrax had become a sort of epidemic. But luckily, it was cut short. So that was thought to be biological warfare. Likewise, in many countries, including India, we do have, possibly be having, I don't know, but then that's a thing of debate or discussion. Biological warfare. In this biological warfare, you introduce a mutated virus into a country at a specified period of time. For example, in India, this month, August, September, June, July, August, September, when you have got pollen grains are there, when monsoon is there, you introduce such airborne viruses, and it spreads throughout the population, engulfing cities after cities, states after states, and entire countries involved. And till the time you find a cure, half of the population is already affected. So these are also the reasons one need to think of when you have asked this question.
Thank you very much. And we're going to be having on September 19th on the Health In Show, Dr. Rebecca Carley, a discussion about biological warfare and vaccinations, which is going to be very educational. That's going to be at a different time. You might be sleeping. It's, I think, 6:30 in the evening Eastern time, so you're probably going to be fast asleep, but there will be an archive of the show.
Okay, so I mean, that would be a great show, because nowadays, I mean, many countries seriously need to look into the threat of this biological warfare. And a problem is, you can deal with known viruses, known organisms, because already established line of treatments are available. But I remember I was talking about chikungunya. Chikungunya, when I was in my MBBS days, it was such a small paragraph in the book itself. And we used to literally discard it in microbiology. We used to read in virology about this virus. And it was such a small virus. I mean, not even worth reading. So that was in 1994, 1995. And now in 2006, we actually witnessed an epidemic. And it started in, it started in Bombay or Pune. And spread throughout the country. The entire population of India was affected. And still now, at least in diabetics and in immune-suppressed people, in those rheumatoid arthritis who are taking steroids or who are steroids, still they are facing the bad effects of that viral disease. And it also, forget about the disease, it instigated so many chronic disorders in so many people who have been well with the fever and the joint pain. But it started instigating hypertension and hypothyroidism and so many other disorders. So, till the cure was found for chikungunya, half the population was already affected, and then they could find medications in any system, say allopathy or homeopathy. Of course, in allopathy, there were hardly any drugs because there are no antiviral drugs. But as far as chikungunya is concerned, but in homeopathy, we really had wonderful results with Eupatorium Perf, Rustox, and Stellaria media. These three remedies, even arsenic, Cedron, these 4 to 5 remedies were used widely during that time, and immense benefit the entire population did get. So, and then we also had got a viral epidemic of SARS virus, SARS virus. So then the flus, the flu which we had got recently, it was a mixture of the bird flu, swine flu, and the human flu. So swine flu, it was termed as swine flu. Now, that is a mutated virus, and that is why that happened, I think, in 2010. So in such a situation, it was a terrible time for the government of India to come out with a test and then invent drugs, because the local drugs, the already established drugs, did not work on that virus. So yes, a very relevant question asked by a person living exactly on the other side of the world. I don't know if it happens in France or not, but it definitely happens in India and around India. And so very good question to ask, and a question remains debatable, and particularly this biological warfare. And we would be very happy to listen to that show, what comes out finally of that show on 19th of September. Please do listen, everyone who's hearing that.
Thank you. We do have many, many different kinds of viruses in all parts of the world that are showing up in all ages, and we need to investigate and have more research of homeopathics as a means of dealing with them. And basically, sanitation, good health practices, good food preparation practices, and these kinds of things will probably reduce the amount of viruses substantially just by that.
Exactly. But see, certain viruses, in spite of the good sanitation and all, I mean, this chikungunya has affected everyone. I remember many years ago, there was an epidemic of Japanese encephalitis virus. Now, Japanese encephalitis virus is a bad virus. It actually causes encephalitis. Encephalitis meaning thereby inflammation of the cerebral tissues. The patient goes into delirium, has got high-grade fever, goes into coma and dies. And with that, the first time, the government of India extensively used Belladonna. And with Belladonna, many patients could be saved. And actually, that became one of the very, very important investigatory tool. I mean, a study that homeopathy medicines act in epidemics. And from then on, it was, I don't know the year exactly, but I think 20, 25 years ago, whenever that epidemic had taken place. And so many millions of people actually resorted to homeopathy as the last remedy. Belladonna was the drug given freely distributed. And luckily, 70 to 80% were saved because of that Japanese encephalitis virus. So, yes, homeopathy medicines do work wonders. And I believe in Peru, they are... I don't know the name of the company preparing vaccines. They are definitely investigating the role of homeopathy medicines very seriously in viral epidemics.
Yes, I think you're thinking probably of the Cuban.
Cuban. This I don't remember. I'm not. I know the. I've been there, but I don't. Just can't get the name on my lips.
Okay, that's okay. If I think of it, I will help you out. Because I have written a major article about it. And Ananda Moore is from Canada, and she has done a documentary concerning the epidemic down there and the use of millions of doses of homeopathics to prevent disease. And she's actually in need of some support. And let me see if I can find that for you and provide the information. In the meantime,
I have actually met the principal investigator, Dr. Gustav, G-U-S-T-A-V, and I think in one of the international congresses I had happened to meet him. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. And he told me it was a fascinating thought. And in a small country like Cuba, going so widely with homeopathy, it was amazing. And even in India, of course, lots and lots of people are doing a good amount of work as far as viral epidemics have been concerned, and they are bringing out evidence-based results in the population studies and all. So the work really has been isn't carried out in seriously. Central Council of Homeopathy in India and CCRH, that is Central Council of Homeopathic Research, they are into it. And because India keeps on getting such viral epidemics left, right and center every other year, and seeing the last results with for SARS virus and as well as this chikungunya, with Eupatorium Perf and Rustox and arsenic and small these remedies. Wonderful results. I remember SARS virus in Nagpur, the hospital where I'm at, the allopathic hospital where I'm attached, we had 23 cases of coma. I mean, they got the virus, they got the typical flu and that thing, and slipped into coma. So, all affluent families, young boys and girls, 23 age, 25 years, 30 years. And one case, I do remember a case whose, she was only 22 years old. And the daughter of a very famous pediatrician of our city, she was carrying and she was 9th month pregnant. And she must have contracted this virus and she lapsed into coma. And for, not my 9 month, 8 month. So for one full month she was on ventilator. And of course, we couldn't save her, but the child was saved and nothing had happened to the child. I mean, 1 month of ventilator, I was called there to see and to help, if I could help any one of them or both of them. I said, because already the lungs were completely gone and she was in deep coma. So we tried opium, we tried laxatives, we tried hyoscyamus, but unfortunately it did not work. But the child is perfectly well, it's still there. So, I mean, you lose precious lives. And if homeopathy could help in the very earlier stage, it would be a wonderful thing.
So you're saying that other means of saving this young woman were tried for a long time before?
1 month. For 1 month they were tried. And last I was called, that could you please offer homeopathic help? I said, I mean, had you called me a bit earlier, because when she was admitted, she was hospitalized, she was not in coma. Because she was 8 months pregnant, she had just gone for fever, etc., and she was hospitalized. But then in the hospital, again, she deteriorated, and after 1 month, I was called. So I was called too late. So homeopathic help, I was resorted to too late. Fortunately, we could help the child. Of course, whether homeopathy did or it was nature's gift, that's a point quite debatable, but I don't know. We gave her many drugs, but unfortunately, we could. But other persons we could save. We could actually bring them out of coma. At least 3 cases on record. So, those 3 lives have been saved. Others, of course. But what I want to say is, there are many viral epidemics for which antiviral drugs are not available. Tests are not there. But in homeopathy, we have got genus epidemicus. If homeopaths are open-minded, if discussions are there, at early stage, homeopathy is resorted to, I believe we can really control these viral epidemics. Even if they are biological warfare.
Okay. I think that even though we got through one question and we have 8 or 9, I would like to move over to studying Kent. And we'll just save some of the questions for following shows.
Fine.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah. I mean, I am open to... no problem.
And I will check in the chat if anybody gives us any clue how they feel about it and what they would like to learn. Just wave to us, call us, do something. Okay.
So, I believe that we had started from abscess and adhesions. We finished A, B, and we were in the middle of the C constriction. And lots of sub-rubrics of constriction we did discuss. But one sub-rubric in particular on page 826. Constriction eating after. Did you get it?
Yes, I have open to page 826.
And constriction eating after.
Yes, I do.
And there is one remedy, Pulsidla, in 2 marks. And I would also want, constriction eating after is a very, very specific and early symptom of gallstones or cholelithiasis.
Right.
And now there are 2 stages of gallstones. See, though you don't directly get, the stones don't form directly. Initially, a sand is formed. I mean, the particles are in the sand stage and then slowly they crystallize and form stones, the gallstones. So even when the person has a tendency for gallstones and People who have got tendency to gallstones are fair, fat, flabby, 50 years, fat, and who have tried to lose weight very fast. For example, a fat female who tries to lose weight very fast in mid-50s, she has a greater chance of developing gallstones. So, such a female, even males can develop gallstones. And if gallstones develop in healthy males, it's a bad sign. It indicates some systemic disorder rather than only gallstones. So, in the initial stages, when the stand is developing, a person develops a dyspepsia. I mean, disliking for the foods she loved best or he loved best. For example, a man would say, Doc, I'm a chronic smoker and I love smoking. But since lately, in 2-3 months, I don't know somehow, but I still smoke, but I don't enjoy smoking. These are one of the first symptoms, few symptoms. Even alcohol, I don't enjoy smoking. And then slowly and steadily, the patient leaves smoking and alcohol. The same way with tea and same way with whatever one enjoys, the food starts, you start avoiding those foods. You don't enjoy the taste of this food. They are one of
isn't that good? We don't want them to smoke. We don't want them to drink too much.
That's a different thing. We don't want, that's a different thing. But when you start losing, that is, of course, with addictions. But what's wrong in, chocolates? Many chocoholics, they start losing the taste of chocolate. They don't like chocolates anymore.
Uh-huh.
So, but then it gives a signal that something is wrong, and something is wrong with the liver. What can be wrong? Is it the liver function, or it can be gallstones? It can be sands in the gallbladder. So it should give you a clue. So they are very, very early symptoms, and the patient keeps on complaining, but the doctor does not take it to heart. Or say, no, nothing must have happened. You must be weak or something. And the smallest complaint, which is the initial complaint, is discarded. Then slowly, as the sand keeps on crystallizing, some people may go in for an investigation. Many of them don't. They just pull on, and then they start having dyspepsia. That means when they see the food, the sight of the food, that which is typical of sepia and arsenic, the sight and the smell of the food disgusts them. I mean, they don't want, just because it's their meal time, it's breakfast time, they have the breakfast. It's lunch time, so they don't have an appetite. So that appetite keeps on decreasing, and they don't enjoy food. And that's the second symptom, is called dyspepsia. And the third symptom would be pain. And initially, it is not pain. It is this constriction eating after. Many times the patient says, Doc, I prefer to remain hungry. I don't like to eat. The moment I get eating, it feels heaviness, a sense of constriction. It's an entire chest, more on the right side, less on the left side. But then definitely, if I'm hungry, I can move about miles together. I can run, I can walk. But after food, you don't tell me to move. There's a peculiar constricting sensation. And yes, pulsatilla is the remedy. But second remedy, which we already discussed, I think a month or 2 months ago, before, is feltauri.
Show number 25, if anybody wants to look it up.
Feltauri. Please add feltauri 3 marks. It is a very, very specific symptom. Constriction after eating is feltauri 3 marks. And a very specific remedy for gallstones. It not only decreases symptoms of gallstones, but also actually decreases the size of gallstones. Now, please don't tell me how does it do that. I will not be able to explain, because our homeopathy medicines are energy medicines, or they act dynamically. But still, the effects are seen in many, many patients. Day in and day out, we keep on seeing sonographic evidences. And one of my teachers, the day before yesterday, he came and thanked me. Today, thanked me because gallstone. 8 months ago, he was advised surgery. And I said, sir, please don't go in for surgery. Just try homeopathy medicine. And he had come to me very casually, not believing in homeopathy much. But then once he got the results, all his stones, sand, he had got 8 stones 8 months ago. And I gave him one dose of Lycopodium as a constitutional remedy and feltauri. 3x daily for 3 months, and he did his sonography about 2-3 weeks back, and everything was disappeared. So symptomatically he's fine. He has got evidence that now stones also have gone. So really we can help. a constriction eating after, please add feltauri. It's not there in Ken's repertory. I don't know. I don't think even it's there in Robin Murphy's repertory. So please add.
No, it is not listed. Oh, I didn't check. I didn't check in Murphy. Okay. Go ahead.
Then we have discussed constriction during inspiration, constriction menses before. Now, constriction menses before is phosphorus, and constriction menses during is sepia. Another very peculiar disease which we have during menses. Now, it's not just a feeling of constriction anybody and everybody can have. Sometimes, in females who are unmarried or some females who have got endometriosis. Now, what do you mean by endometriosis? Endometrium is the inner lining of uterus, and it should be only in the uterus. It need not be outside. But in some females, either call it genetic or we don't know how, but some bits and pieces of endometrium are scattered around the pelvis. So whenever they have got menstruation, whenever they start of menstruation, there is immense pain, there is swelling, because that menstruation also become that endometrial tissue outside the
uterus
also becomes very active. Now, certain females have got endometrium in places as far as the nose. So every time they get bleeding from the nose, epistaxis during menses. Then some females have got endometrium in the pleura. So always they have got pleural effusion whenever there is
every month.
Of course rare, but still you have got females. I mean, you have got such cases, and one is confused. How does it? Since the menses have started, first, second, year may go abnormal because the female does not understand at all. The girl does not understand, but then it becomes a routine problem. In Merck-Sol, if you read, you have got milk instead of menses, right?
What do we have in Merck-Sol?
Milk instead of menses. Whenever a female starts having menses, and if she is a Merck-Sol person, she has got galactoria. That means milk oozes out. Milk-like fluid oozes out. Actually, milk does not ooze out. It is milk-like serous fluid which oozes out from the nipples. And
right.
You have a good flow from the nipples, but you don't have menses. I mean, the menstrual flow is extremely scanty or absent, and in that's its place, you have got flow from the breasts. There's a very peculiar symptom in Merck-Sol. And fortunately, people do respond to that Merck-Sol given in ascending potencies. Of course, I know of only one patient, because in my entire life, I've seen only one such patient. And I also always think about when I was reading Alan's keynotes initially in Merck-Sol, I used to always wonder, how can this be possible? I mean, it cannot be possible. But when my mother had an opportunity to see and introduced me to one of such cases, I really started believing that, yes, people can have such varied symptoms like milk instead of menses. Then in Bryonia and Kallikaab, you have got the breast becomes extremely heavy during time of menses. Now, why should the breast become extremely heavy? In other females, it does not. So, it can be because of endometriosis, but what we are discussing, constriction, menses during or menses before, premenstrual, if you guys have got phosphorus, and during menses, you've got sepia. Every time the patient complains of, it can be because of small bits and pieces of endometriosis in the pleural cavity or in the mediastinum. And that is why you have a very constricting feeling that is very much possible, or rather, a scientific explanation for this sensation.
I'm still here. I'm listening.
Yeah.
I'm listening and learning so much from you. And this is all coming from a discussion in the chess chapter of Kent's repertory for those who are listening and want to follow along. It's on page 826. I'm sure that today many women have these types of problems, but I'm quite shocked to hear that in Alan's day he would see such a symptom. So it seems bizarre and strange to me.
Yeah, but see, initially when you read and we do, when you have never seen such a case, it seems bizarre. But when you actually see those cases, okay, fine, seeing the cases is all right. But once you give the remedies, see the effects, see the results, and then you have to actually salute them. You have to salute those master clinicians. And how could they actually put on such a rubric? How, and in the proving, how could he actually get that rubric in Merck-Sol, or that proving symptom in the Merck-Sol? That's wonderful. We are so lucky that we are not in his days and times. I don't know what the homeopaths in those times used to do. Today we have lots and lots of information available. But unfortunately, still people don't use them.
Which means that the remedy Merck Solubus elicited these symptoms in sensitive provers who were given a potentized remedy, not a crude drug, or I doubt a crude drug. And
no. It is potentized remedy. It is potentized. Proving cannot be done with crude drugs. It has to be done with potentized remedy.
Right. So, in other words, we're not looking at double-blind studies in rats. We're not looking at people in the research lab looking under a cell. Basically, we're talking about giving this remedy to a group of individuals who take it and then tabulate how they feel and what's going on, that the symptoms that they're responding to this remedy. And we're getting an abundance of information that can be used forever without hurting anybody or anything.
Yeah, and some rubrics, the original provings have been in the four source books which you call in homeopathy. They are Allen's Encyclopedia, then we have got Herring's Guiding Symptoms, we have got Clark's Dictionary, and Materia Medica Pura. These are called four source books wherein proving is actually done. Then, along with it, the Materia Medica grows by clinical proving, what we call. For example, if a senior homeopath who has been practicing for 25, 30, 40 years, he or she gets such a patient and tries a particular drug and consistently find results, then also this is called as a clinical proving, and it is incorporated in the Materia Medica as the proving of that drug. So it's not always the proving in by potentized medicine in a healthy individual, as is said in the Organon of Medicine by Hahnemann. There are many times when you have got clinical provings as well. Then we have got another type of provings, which is called as provings from pathology or
toxicity or poisoning.
Yeah. If we know that particular toxin does this action on this body, then also in minute minuscule doses, that is potentized form, we can use it to antidote it. So these symptoms also make up the proving. But they are few. Most important symptoms are those symptoms which are proven healthy provers. And during Hahnemann's time, 93 drugs, which are called polycrest remedies, they have been proved extensively. But in today's times, we have got N number of drugs, at least 1,000 or more drugs, which are completely proved. So we are really taking steps forward on this count.
Mm-hmm.
So, Evel, coming back to our topic of discussion, constriction, menses before and during. So some people would wonder why one should get constriction before menses or during menses. Of course, you would leave it as hormonal play, but yes, the better explanation would be endometriosis. Endometriosis, the endometrium scattered, leaving its original site in the uterus, scattered bits and pieces somewhere in the lungs, lung tissue, somewhere in the nose tissue, somewhere in the pharynx or the throat, and you can get recurrent laryngitis and pharyngitis, recurrent and spasmodic constriction, a rubric which is given below sitting while spasmodic, and you get kind of spasmodic constriction. But if it's during menses, then it is because of endometriosis. Otherwise, spasmodic constriction is a very well documented feature of asthma, bronchial asthma,
mm-hmm.
as well as inferior wall myocardial infarction. Inferior wall myocardial infarction presents many times not with typical chest pain, but it presents with spasmodic constriction in the chest. And that is very well seen in diabetics. Now, diabetes as a disease, diabetics are a class apart. I mean, a few days ago, I had a patient with this rubric exactly. He sustained, he's basically a class 1 officer in Mumbai and is working in a very high post. And he's around 56 years old. About 2 months, one month ago, he was walking on the roadside and he started developing a spasm. He said, he showed this to his nearby his private physician. And the physician said that it's esophageal spasm. It's simple acidity. You take antacids and certain drugs and you'll be all right. He took those drugs, but nothing helped. He went to a homeopath. Luckily for him, he went to a homeopath. The homeopath gave him magnesium phosphate, because of this spasmodic feeling in the chest. But he was slightly better, but he could not decipher what was happening to him. So ultimately, he went to a specialist who did an electrocardiogram and told him that he has a heart attack and an inferior myocardial infarction. He was admitted, hospitalized, and he was thrombolized because he was actually having a serious infarction. So then his angiography was done. The right coronary artery causes, the blockage of the right coronary artery causes the inferior wall myocardial infarction. So that was blocked 100%. They did his angioplasty, and till the angioplasty was done, he had this constriction, a spasmodic constriction in the chest. And once his angioplasty was finished, the sensation was gone, and he had come to me so that this should not repeat it again and again, because angioplasty today or tomorrow is bound to be restenosed. The arteries are supposed to be restenosed. So to prevent restenosis, he wants to take homeopathy. So right from Mumbai, he came to Nagpur. And so what I wanted to say is, I told him that you're only 54 years old. All his vessels had blockage, 70%, 60%, but this was 100%. That is why angioplasty was done only in one. I said, this is a diabetic heart. He said, I don't have diabetes. My sugar levels are normal. So I explained to him that sugar, elevation of blood sugar is only one symptom of diabetes. This itself, a young person presenting with extensive atherosclerosis in the arteries, is again a diabetic heart, what we call. And a diabetic heart does not present with the typical features of a heart attack, acute chest pain and all, no. It presents as angina variants, what we call, and constriction spasmodic. A spasmodic feeling in the entire chest is a feeling of variant angina pectoris, and it's very common in diabetics. And asafoetida is a very good drug, yes.
Thank you for teaching us that. So
and
people
had,
need to study
had
up
that
on
homeopath,
this.
Had that homeopath known about this rubric, he would have given, instead of MacFos, he should have given Cupramet. Cupramet is also listed in this as 2-mark symptom. He would have definitely felt symptomatically better. But
okay, can you repeat again? Cupramet would be for what? The spasmodic?
Constriction spasmodic. Asafoetida and ignitia, 3-mark symptoms, but Cupramet is more frequently given, and it responds much better. Cupramet is given 2 marks.
Okay, can you spell that? I can't even say it.
Asafoetida. Asafoetida. Asafoetida.
Okay.
Asafoetida, ignitia. These are given in 2. Now, ignitia is not because it's a hysterical symptom. No, ignitia also has got this spasmodic type of sensation, and even in angina pectoris patients or heart attack patients, ignitia really relieves the symptoms.
Great.
Now, there are pros and cons about this. Suppose if you don't suspect a heart symptom and you only have given Cupramed or for that matter asafoetida, then the patient would be at ease, that symptoms would go on decreasing. But unfortunately in diabetics, inside the pathology is far advanced and outward manifestations are few as it is. And even if you decrease those few symptoms and not tackling the pathology, the patient suddenly collapses. So the physician treating, the homeopathic physician treating, yes, since the patient has come to you, God forbids he or she has an infarction, you should suspect an infarction. So for palliation, the decreasing symptoms, you can give drugs like asafoetida and ignitia and cuprimet or causticum. But they will do nothing to the inner pathology. For example, the plaque, the 100% plaque inside the artery, the cause, which is the reason for which the entire symptom came up. So in many times, what happens is, particularly in the Indian scenario, the patient is relieved, he or she goes home and rests. Instead of going back to the specialist doctor and finding out what was the cause of this spasmodic constriction, he or she said, no, my pain is over. I'm feeling much better, doc. So I might as well go home and rest. Why should I go to a specialist now? So that is the attitude adopted. And in that case, the heart attack keeps on proceeding inside. Symptoms are not there. And the patient may die. It may be a fatal attack, or the patient may collapse, or go into heart failure. So there are two points to be seen while giving symptomatic drugs to such patients. Constriction, spasmodic.
Okay, I would like to just remind everybody that this is a study session. If you are having any serious condition, call and visit your healthcare provider. We are just learning together. This is a free educational lesson. We give all of our devotion to Dr. Adil for teaching us. Okay.
Then we have got other sub-rubrics, but another sub-rubric which I have, constriction as from sulfur. Sulfur as from. Kali chlor. There's only one drug, and it is very, very characteristic of bronchial asthma. Constriction, sulfur as from. The typical bronchial asthma. And you have got another wonderful drug, better than Kali chlor. It is bromium. Unfortunately, bromium is not listed here, but in Materia Medica of bromium, this sensation is there in 3 marks. Constriction, sulfur as from. If you read bromium, you'll find that, but it's unfortunately in the this repertory, bromium is not mentioned. Then we have got constriction after supper. Constriction, supper after. Meals after, supper after, dinner after, lunch after, whatever, if it is meals, if you have got constriction, unless otherwise proved, first think of a cardiac event rather than acidity or gastritis. In acidity, you may have got burps, you can have burps, you can have heartburns, that means you can have regurgitation of sour fluid, but generally you don't tend to have pain or constriction of the chest. If it's entire chest, please do think of a cardiac ailment, particularly angina. So constriction, supper after, aggravation, mesarium, of course, a very, very uncommon drug. You cannot think, even if you are very good in Materia Medica, mesarium does not come to a mind for such a symptom. Of course, I have also never used it, but I would rather use Nux Vomica, which acts very, very fast, even if it's supper after or meals after or lunch after, whatever. Kali, Bichrome and Nux Vomica, they are the first two remedies which will strike to me. Constriction of the chest, supper after, aggravation of meals after, whatever you want to call it.
So I'm going to write into my book the Nux Vomica because it's not even listed.
Yeah.
And
rather you should give it 3 marks because it's one of the first symptoms, first drug to act. It acts very fast. So mesarium, even if you don't know much mesarium, it's all right. Nux Vomica would solve your problem. At the most, Kali Bichrome, yes, that also solves the problem. There are many patients who complain, doc, till I have not had my supper or lunch, you tell me to do whatever physical work you want to do, I'll do it. But after I have to rest a bit, I just cannot walk. A moment I walk, I don't have pain in the chest. I have that constricting sensation. Something is pulling me inside, and that is very characteristic of angina. So in those cases, Nux Vomica or Kali Bai are better indicated. Mesarium, of course, given in 1 mark. Then we have got another sub-rubric, touch aggravates. Constriction, touch aggravates. Any guesses in which condition would you get this?
I am thinking, today, this is really serendipitous, that today on the HWC website under the group called Translating Language into Repertory Rubrics, I had been looking up mind touch aggravates and mind touch aversion to being touched. And there are different remedies listed with many, many more for being averse to being touched, where it says touch aggravates, there's about 15 or so remedies. There's everything from aconite, antimonium crude, antimonium tart, bryonia, chamomilla, senna, colchicum, that's a liver remedy. Lachesis, miserium is listed there also, and thuja as major remedies. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question, but none of those you're saying arnica and cuprum are listed. And that's not that was my question, because in mind touched being aggravates, arnica wasn't even listed in this repertory. It was only listed under averse to being touched. Is that strange?
Yeah, arnica has got both symptoms, averse to being touched and touch aggravates.
Okay.
Averse to being touched is because of the fear that I would be getting hurt. Once I have sustained an injury and if a doctor starts examining me, I would get the pain, the sore, lame, bruised feeling which I am going to get. So it's better that the dog does not touch me. This is again an arnica symptom. And second, if the doctor has really touched me, again I'm going to get pain. Again is a symptom of arnica. So arnica has to be mentioned in both the places. Aversion to being touched is a mental symptom. It's actually an anxiety or an apprehension that if I'm being touched, I will get pain. So that's a mental symptom. Again, is there in arnica, 3 marks. It's very much prominent in arnica. Arnica does not let you examine. The arnica patient does not let the doctor examine. The doctor has to stand far apart. The arnica patient, again, is a very slow talker, gives you the precise symptoms, and that's it. So, but this constriction, touch aggravates, is very, very characteristically seen in a disease which is called as herpes zoster.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Herpes zoster of the chest. If you get herpes zoster of the chest, after the eruptions are over and once they are fading, then you have got post-herpatic neuralgia. It's a very, very painful condition. And the patient prefers not to wear clothing because even the touch of clothes is unbearable. It aggravates. It causes a shooting pain. And for that, hypericum does not act. It is arnica. Unfortunately, again, arnica is given in 1 mark. Both the drugs are given in 1 mark. But arnica is a very, very important drug for that symptom because it's a very bad symptom. Neuralgic symptom. And it takes days to go. 15, 20, 30 days. It may last for a month. I still have a patient who is diabetic and his sugar is uncontrolled. And he has been having herpes zoster and practically 20 days now. He has this characteristic symptom. The entire chest, on the left side of the chest, he has got the entire the eruptions that come. It was 20 days ago. And the first 7 to 10 days, we gave him cantharis because of the severe burning of that herpes zoster. The eruptions have gone. After the eruptions have gone, we gave him ranunculosis bulbosus. Again, a very specific medicine for post-herpatic neuralgia. So the pain has decreased. But now, the other day, I'm not joking, he was brought to me by his, he doesn't have children, so his nephew drove him and he came to me without his shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
So in the clinic, in doctor's clinic if you approach, it's quite, no one does so unless you're forced to do so. I have started him on arnica 0/1 this week itself. Now let's see, I don't know, he has not come to me as a follow-up. But I believe he should be. He said, "Doc, I just can't bear the touch." So we actually see patients. He's of herpes zoster. The problem is, why is he taking so long? Is because of his uncontrolled diabetic state. His sugar is 240 post meal, and some 136 or 140 fasting. So he definitely needs to control his blood sugar levels, for which I have given him Cefalendra. But more than that, this tiring symptom, this symptom of touch aggravation, constriction, entire chest, left side of the chest is constricted. Initially, I did not think of arnica, I thought of lachesis. But then I was thinking of this touch, and luckily arnica struck me. And I looked upon this repertory page number 827, and I have given him arnica 0/1. Let's see what happens.
Okay, tell us what happens. This is a series.
Yeah.
You left us hanging. I would like to know, how long does it usually take to get a diabetic's sugar level under control? Should it take this long, 20 days or more?
Yeah, in uncontrolled sugars, it takes. It may go on, proceed to 2 or 3 months also. So you need to have good sugar control. Apart from the diabetic status, so sugar control needs... see, now what happens is, in any crisis like these, like herpes zoster, basically, if it comes, it means that the immunity level has gone down. Whosoever it affects, for example, it has affected this gentleman, who is a diabetic. That means the immune status has gone down. That is why this herpes zoster has come up. It has risen. It's actually a chickenpox virus. And it does not affect until the patient is low on resistance level. So if your resistance goes down, it's that time the virus raises its head up. So that's one part. Second part is, it flourishes again in low resistance states. Third, because of its intensity of its spread and the symptoms it produces, that is terrible itching and pain, and the post-herpetic, the neuralgia, because to combat that stress, the blood sugar rises. So you are in a bad soup, you are in a cycle. Because of your raised blood sugar or uncontrolled diabetic state, this has come up. Because this viral infection has come up, again you have got high sugars. Because that's the only way the body can combat crisis. Physical crisis is combated only by raising your BP and sugar. So you are in a cycle. But still, you have to come out of that cycle, and these drugs do help. Arnica would help him, I believe so. Because it's 1 week now, he has not telephoned me. Otherwise, he would have called me up, "Doc, I'm not feeling well. Should I stop this arnica, or should I take something else, or should I come back to you?" Whatever. I mean, he would have called me. It's 1 week. I believe he is better.
Very good. Arnica is our number one remedy that we think of in so many cases. And and we do consider it a major heart remedy because of its ability to cleanse the blood.
I have given it the dictum. Arnica is a sorbitor of homeopathy.
Repeat that again.
Arnica is the sorbitrate of homeopathy. Sorbitrate is the drug which dilates the blood vessels and decreases angina pectoris. So
yes,
in place of allopathic sorbitrate, if you give arnica 30 or arnica 6, you get the same results.
Very good.
So practically all those people who are taking sublingual sorbitrates, I advise them to take arnica 6 bottle in their pockets, keep them in there, and whenever they've got chest pain, they should take 2 or 3 pellets of arnica, 3 or 2 or 3 globules, and the pain goes away. And I'm very happy, touch wood, I'm very happy to say that very, very few people have told me otherwise, that, "Doc, still, in spite of your medicines, I had to take sorbitrate." That's extremely few and far apart. And if that is the case, then I shift on the drug lactodactyl-SMAC. Lactodactyl-SMAC is another drug which definitely decreases angina if arnica fails. So, but more, in majority of cases, 6 or 30 arnica kept in pocket serves the same purpose as sorbitrate would do in allopathy for angina patients.
Okay, so here we are at the page 827 in Kent.
And I think I mean, I can go on discussing rubric after rubric, but I am only taking very, very important rubrics, clinically viable rubrics we see daily, day in and day out. For example, now constriction sides. Then we have got constriction lower part, constriction lungs, constriction mammary, middle, but constriction sides are there. Please, there's the last sub-rubric. Then you have got constriction right-sided, constriction lying down. In which conditions are you going to get right-sided chest constriction? The only or one of the major diseases is pleural effusion. If there is an effusion or pleurisy, that is one disease wherein you get right side constriction and the drug Cocculus and Zincum is given. I would add to it mercurius sulf and kali iode. Kali iode is a very specific remedy for chest constriction sides right.
Okay, let me keep up with you. Sides right. Okay. It says
Cocculus and Zincum metallic.
Okay, very good.
But neither kali iode has been mentioned, nor has merc sulf been mentioned. And both are right-sided remedies, very specific. Both of them have got symptoms, chest constriction right side, and they are very specifically meant for pleural effusion, because it is pleural effusion, one of the major causes which causes right-sided constriction.
And remember that the listeners, this will be archived, so you can listen as many times as you like to get these concepts and remedies into your head to remember them and to take notes.
Then you have got chest constriction sides lying down aggravation. And in which you have got Lilimtic and Platina, the two drugs. Again, pleural effusion person can't lie down the side of the effusion, if it's right or left side, whichever side it is, but you can't lie down on those sides. And suppose if you're upright and you don't have the sensation, then you can have this Cocculus and Zincum. But if lying down aggravates, for the same sensation, you can have Lilimtic or Platina. Lilimtic for right side, Platina for left side. Lilimtic is a right-sided remedy, and if for right-side anginal pains or constriction, Lilimtic acts wonders. It has to be given in, again, low potencies, not exceeding 30, and it works very well. But mind you, Lilimtic only will decrease the symptom, but not the effusion state, or not even the pleurisy. You will still have the pleurisy, you have to do something else for the pleurisy, you have to search for some other remedy. But symptomatically, the patient will be palliated with Lilimtic or Platina. Now Platina, of course, you can't, it's a very deep acting drug, so you can't keep on repeating often. So again, in low potency, 3, 6 or 30, you can give it for some time and the patient will be much better moving in and about. One can have restful sleep because lying down aggravates. And in the sleep, suppose you turn to that side on which you have that effusion, again you have to wake up because of the pain. Such episodes would be avoided. Okay?
Very good. All
so
right, so...
10:15?
We went past time. You've given us extra bonus points, and we want to thank you. I know it always gets late for you, time to go home to the family and more celebration and eating. Hopefully you will feel great. And I want to thank all of our listeners, because these are really gifts. These shows are just an amazing gift to you, to be here with us. And on tomorrow we're going to have Alan Phillips talking about vaccinations and our rights in the United States. Learn about your legal legislature and what you can do, how you can protect yourself if you can anymore. And I say that with a bit of skepticism, Dr. Adil. The world has changed, and we do talk about current events. Next Monday, I need to post that Janie Goddard is going to be talking about anti-aging. It will be a fascinating discussion.
Wow.
Find out about that. And then it'll, you know, these Wednesday rolls around really quickly. So we're into September, and I'm waiting for the weather to cool off. And I don't know how
it was on 15th of September. It will be 1 year when we celebrate the anniversary of our show. It was 15th of September 2011 when we had begun the first show.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, we have gone a long way. Okay, I'm very excited. We will have to have another celebration. Okay, so thank you everyone for listening. We're going to sign off and see you next week. Don't forget to tweet it on Twitter, put it on Facebook, and share all of the archives in the group on Homeopathy World Community. Sending you all of our best.
Before we end, I still want that people please keep on asking questions. Although, we would be discussing fewer questions with greater amount, because our basic show is repertory, and we were quite lagging behind, not discussing the rubrics. Every time we would ended up the shows only by answering questions. But this time, we have done half of, answer a few questions. But unfortunately, we could take up only one question tonight. And stop asking questions. It is a great moral boost for us. It helps us to know that you are listening and to come up with something new. You ask questions and entire discussion can go on. So after all, this is a show for you, for us. It's our learning. And again, wishing you all happy Teacher's Day. We end.
Okay. Sending out love and blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.